WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm David Bianculli, TV critic for the New York Daily News, sitting in for Terry Gross. Fridays at Fresh Air are devoted to archive interviews, tapes of conversations retrieved from the vault because of some renewed relevance. Today, we'll remember one of America's most popular novelists, Evan Hunter, who died earlier this week. Under the pen name Ed McBain, Hunter wrote more than 50 books pioneering the modern police precinct novel. Hunter also wrote the screenplay for Alfred Hitchcock's The Birds. But first, we want to note yesterday's events in London. This is the sort of important, devastating story where the facts, as well as the ramifications, emerge slowly. As a TV critic, I'd especially urge viewers looking for continuing coverage to seek out the newscasts from the BBC. They're available several times daily on the cable network BBC America, and also televised by many public television stations. The BBC coverage is full of spirit and bravery, as well as outrage and reassurance, and it's really something to see. Now to Evan Hunter, who died Wednesday of cancer at age 78. Hunter wrote the book The Blackboard Jungle, a partly autobiographical novel about an idealistic young teacher shocked by conditions at an inner-city high school. He wrote screenplays for Hollywood, including an adaptation of Daphne du Maurier's The Birds for Alfred Hitchcock. And he wrote scores of novels under several different pen names as well as his own. Most famously, he wrote 55 novels as Ed McBain, a series of police novels set in the 87th Precinct. The last of them, Fiddlers, has yet to be published. The first of them, Cop Hater, came out in 1956, just under 50 years ago. It established a new genre in crime fiction, set in the squad room, evoking a fresh sense of realism in its portrayal of criminals, cops, and crimes. Many subsequent novels and TV shows, from Joseph Wambaugh's cop thrillers to Hill Street Blues, owe a large debt to Hunter's imagination and writing style. Terry first spoke with Evan Hunter in 1987. He told her he had tried out other genres before settling into writing about crime and the police.
When I first began writing, I tried my hand at every sort of fiction that the pulps were publishing. I did westerns and adventure stories and science fiction and sports stories and some detective stories. And I also tried a few what have come to be known as police procedurals, where a policeman or a group of policemen were the heroes. And I decided back then that the only valid people to deal with a crime, especially a crime as serious as murder, were cops. If you come home and find your wife slaughtered in her bed, you don't call the little old lady next door and interrupt her knitting so she can come out and solve the crime as she does in many amateur detective novels. You may call your lawyer, but certainly not to solve the crime. You'll call him to inform you that your wife is dead in bed, and he'll say, "Did you do it?" And if you say no, he'll say, "Then call the police right away. I'll be right there."
You know, I figure one of the big differences between private detective novels and police procedurals is that the private detective has decided to work outside of the system and is usually a loner, whereas in the police novel, they're obviously having to work within the system.
Yeah, even more than that, the cops in the Private Eye novel are the heavies for the most part.
That's right.
Cops would leave the Private Eye alone, he'd have this thing solved in 5 minutes, but they're interrupting him and bothering him, and so he can't get his work done. But I suppose he is a loner. He's not outside the law. You know, Private Eyes are entirely legal, and they have licenses to practice their art. And
they're outside the bureaucracy.
Yeah, and they really are out of their, they're over their heads when it comes to solving murders, because they're not supposed to be solving murders. You know, they're supposed to be doing skip tracing and adultery cases and insurance frauds and things like that.
The first novel that you wrote that really got national attention was Blackboard Jungle, which was made into a movie of the same name. Now, you taught in a vocational school for a few months when you were young. Is Blackboard Jungle based at all on your experiences as a teacher in New York?
Oh, sure. On my experiences and the experience of other people with whom I had gone to college and who were now teaching. in the system and who were bringing home to me atrocity stories about what they were experiencing around the city.
Did you feel that you weren't quite tough enough to handle some of your students?
Tough enough? I felt as if I were a man standing on a street corner throwing gold coins in the air and no one was picking them up. And I worked very hard preparing for class each day, and I would go in, and it was the most shattering experience I've ever had in my life to try to reach these kids and not be able to, because I knew I had something to give them, and I couldn't give it. I was either ill-prepared to do the job or lacking in some other way, but I was unable to reach the kids, and it was a frustrating experience. I would go home at the end of the day, I was almost on the edge of tears. So I guess maybe I wasn't tough enough.
You know, I'll tell you, I haven't read your novel, but I have seen the movie. And my favorite scene in the movie, and I wonder if you wrote this into the novel or not, is the scene where one of the teachers brings in his jazz record collection and wants to play them the Jazz Me Blues, Bix Beiderbecke's record, and they shatter his whole record collection. Yeah. And he is just heartbroken.
Yeah,
I think it's such a great scene. Did you write that scene?
Oh, sure.
Did that happen to you or someone you knew?
No, it didn't happen to me. I forget. It happened to someone. It's all very hazy now because that was a long time ago, you know. But I think it happened to a friend of mine who brought his jazz collection to school. And I don't think they broke all the records. I think they broke one of them.
Yeah, in the movie,
they throw them all over the room.
They break them all because the students think that kind of jazz is really square and that the only hip thing is rock and roll.
Yeah.
You know, you're a jazz pianist, right? Or you used to be?
Oh, boy. Is that an overstatement?
A hobbyist.
I used to play in a swing band when I was a kid, when I was in my teens, you know. I used to play piano, but really, I am the world's worst piano player. The world's worst. And I no longer even say I play piano. If you know, I never go near it. I just stay far away from it. But you see, that's why you become a novelist, because I wrote Streets of Gold, and the hero of Streets of Gold is a marvelous jazz pianist.
Living out your fantasy through other characters.
Exactly.
Evan Hunter, speaking to Terry Gross in 1987. Here's that scene from the film Blackboard Jungle they were discussing.
Hey, what'd you get there, teacher?
It was music. Wasn't that music you just had on that, teach?
For the next class.
Oh, well, what's the matter with this class?
How's this, Jackie?
Look at your records.
All right, just keep your hands off the records.
Beg your pardon? Come on, teach, swing it. Play something.
No, Joshua's got a test for us. Right, Josh?
You see, music is based on mathematics, and it's just that the next class is a little more advanced.
Well, we're advanced, teach. 2 times 2 is 4.
R4.
Besides, haven't you heard that music is soothing for the savage beasts?
All right, take your seats.
We're just crazy about music, ain't we?
Read, boy.
Hey, Mr. Edwards, why play a record, and then we'll all take the test.
Sure, huh? Please. Oh, come on, teach.
Well, all right. This is kind of a rare one. This is Bix Beiderbecke doing Jazz Me Blues.
Ah, how about some bop?
Yeah, bop is teach.
Listen to this. Pay attention to that cornet. See, Beiderbecke came before James and Elman and Stephen.
How about Frank Sinatra?
Yeah, Frankie, baby.
Ah, Joni James. Come on, get with it, man, eh?
This is Cow Boogie.
All right, keep away from the record. Give him the record.
Sure, teach.
This is Cherokee. Anybody want to hear this record, huh?
A scene from the film Blackboard Jungle, based on the novel by Evan Hunter, who died earlier this week. Hunter came back for a second interview on Fresh Air in 1999, by which time he had written many more novels and received a Lifetime Achievement Award from the Mystery Writers of America.
Did you think your audience's expectations have changed since the 50s? In the amount of violence or suspense, the kind of language that they expect to read?
They've grown used to that. You know, when I wrote The Blackboard Jungle, I had to change the F word to friggin', you know, which was nice and clean. And you wouldn't dream of doing that today. And indeed, you can't go into a movie theater without your friendly neighborhood cleric using the word, or your grandmother. But when I started the 87 Precinct series, I was a so-called serious novelist. At least, you know, I had written several books that dealt with themes other than people killing each other. And the writing in mysteries at that time was at a very low level. And I thought, what I would like to do is to bring to the mystery novel the same novelistic skills I would bring to a so-called serious novel. And I did that. And I think if I taught anything to mystery writers out there, it was that they could dare to write well. You know, gee, I can write well in a mystery and I won't be punished by having stones thrown at me or something. And I think the writing, the level of writing in the mystery novel overall is better today. And I think the mystery reader expects good writing, and if he doesn't get it, will throw the book across the room and say goodbye.
Why have you stuck with not only this genre for so long, but this particular series for so long?
Oh, I find it endlessly fascinating. I find the reasons people find to hurt each other and to justify their hurting of each other are endlessly fascinating. And I feel that the characters in the series are, I keep discovering new things about them each time, so that each book in the series is a fresh entity that stands alone, and that the reader can find something in, even if he's a first-time reader. I love writing about these guys. I love them and the women in their lives, and I just love writing about them. I would never stop.
Have you ever been the victim of a crime?
No. I'm thinking, no.
That's really interesting that after writing about crime for over 40 years.
I've talked to a lot of victims of crimes, you know, and I've seen a lot of victims of crimes, and I've seen them on the sidewalk and hanging from the ceiling, and you can get a pretty good sense of what it's about. I try in the novels to understand both sides of the picture, the side of law and order, and also the side of the guy who's committing the crime. I always like to feel that there's a very thin line that, you know, if you or I need money, we'll go to a bank and ask to borrow it. The criminal will go to the bank and hold it up, and there's just a slight difference there, but it's close to it. If you or I feel we're unhappy with our mates, we'll seek a divorce. The criminal mind will say, gee, no, I'll kill her, or I'll kill him. But it's almost the flip of the coin which way it's going to go, isn't it?
I don't know why you chose the pseudonym Ed McBain back in the 50s when you started writing the 87th Precinct series, but are you ever sorry that you've been using a pseudonym since the series has lasted for so long and been so popular?
No, not really. I chose it because my editors and my agent felt that it would be damaging to my career again as a so-called serious novelist if it became known that I was also writing mystery novels. And they said you had better put a pseudonym on the novels. And in fact, it was a deep, dark secret for at least 10 years that Ed McBain was in reality Evan Hunter. I felt like Superman, you know, run into a phone booth and rip off the cloak, and there comes Evan Hunter instead of Ed McBain. And I'm not sorry I made the change. You know, we came out of the closet a long time ago, and they knew that I was Ed McBain. But I sometimes wonder if it wouldn't have helped mystery writers everywhere if I had played it straight from the beginning. You know, if they had known that a serious novelist was writing mystery novels, that there was not any taint to writing mysteries. You know, I know deep in my soul, and so does Patricia Cornwell and John Grisham and anyone plying the trade, that they are never, ever, 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 ever going to get the Nobel Prize or the Pulitzer or the Booker or the Prix Goncourt. Never, ever, ever. You know, they may get the Mystery Writers of America Prize, but that's it, kids.
But you wish you'd said that as a writer, you take the genre seriously and you take your books about crime seriously.
I do indeed. Well, they're about life and death, aren't they? I mean, what could be more serious than that?
Evan Hunter, speaking to Terry Gross in 1999. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. We're remembering writer Evan Hunter, who died Wednesday at the age of 78. Hunter also wrote the screenplay for Alfred Hitchcock's The Birds, which was adapted from a novella by Daphne du Maurier. The Birds takes place in an isolated seaside California village, which is experiencing bizarre and ever more threatening bird attacks. Here's a scene from the film.
Now, maybe we're all getting a little carried away by this. Admittedly, a few birds did act strange, but that's no reason to believe.
I keep telling you, this isn't a few birds. These are gulls, crows, swifts.
I have never known birds of different species to flock together. The very concept is unimaginable. Why, if that happened, we wouldn't have a chance. How could we possibly hope to fight them?
We couldn't. You're right. You're right, Mrs. Bundy.
What's the matter? Something wrong out here?
We're fighting a war, Sam.
A war? Against who?
Against birds.
I'm glad you all think this is so amusing. Frighten the children half out of their wits. If the young lady said she saw the attack at a school, why don't you believe her?
What attack? Who attacked the school?
Birds did. Crows. You're all sitting around here debating. What do you want them to do next? Crash through that window?
Mommy.
Shh. Put on your coat. Why don't you all go home? Lock your doors and windows. What's the fastest way to San Francisco?
The freeway, ma'am.
How do I find it?
I'm going out that way, lady. You can follow me.
Well, then let's leave now.
Now, do you feel like you learn things about building suspense by working on The Birds with Hitchcock?
Yeah, he was very good. He was very good on suspense, and he was very good on detail. You know, it was amazing. I'd be in the middle of discussing a scene with him, and he would say out of the blue, "Well, how long has she been in San Francisco now? How long has she been in Bodega Bay?" And I would say, "Well, I don't know, 2 days." And he'd say, "Well, has she called her father?" And I'd say, "What?" He said, "Has she called her father?" I said, "No, she hasn't." He said, "Well, don't you think she should call her father? Tell him where she is, you know?" And I said, "Sure, you know." So it's easy to do a phone call to Papa. Or things like, I'll remember this always, when I described the scene to him where she goes up to the attic. I don't know if you recall the movie where there's been a big bird attack on the house, and they're all sitting around, and Mitch is asleep in the chair, and she's asleep in the other chair, and she hears a sound, and she looks up, she leans over to Mitch, and he doesn't hear her because he's asleep, and she grabs a flashlight and goes to investigate. And I'm describing the scene to him, and this to me, by the way, it didn't turn out to be this in the film itself, but in the screenplay, when she opens the door to that attic, there's every bird imaginable to mankind in that room. I mean, there are hawks, there are eagles, there are seagulls, there are anything you could imagine is in that room. When her eyes pan that room, we see all the birds in the universe in that room, and we know right at that moment that this is a unified attack against human beings and not something we're playing around with here in Bodega Bay. It didn't turn out that way. In the film, he just used crows and seagulls. But I described the scene to him, and she goes up the stairs, and she hesitates, and then she opens the door, and all these birds are in there. And he was silent for a while, and then he said, "Let me see if I have this correctly, Evan." And I said, "Yeah." And I told him, he said, "There's been this massive bird attack on the house." I said, "Yes, there has." He said, "And now she hears a sound, and Mitch is asleep, so she doesn't want to wake him up." I said, "Yes." So she goes to investigate by herself. Have I got that correct? I said, "Yes." He says, "Well, is the girl daft?" You know. So I said, "Well, you know," I realized he had me, and he said, "We'll take the curse off it." He said, we'll have her first go into the kitchen and spot the lovebirds in the cage, and this makes her feel a bit more complacent about it. And then we'll have her along the way open some other doors, and she'll see that everything's okay, and we'll lull the audience until she opens that final door, and boom, there are all the birds.
Now, did you enjoy working with Hitchcock?
Oh, yeah. Well, he was wonderful. He was like... He was like the father every boy wished he could have. You know, he was, I think, approximately twice my age while we were working on the film, and in good health and good spirits, and told me many, many times that he felt he was entering the golden age of making films, his golden age of making films. He had just come off the success of Psycho, you have to understand, and was looking forward to Birds being an even bigger success. But he was... humorous, he was anecdotal, he was generous, he with his time and with his patience, and you know, I was a new kid on the block out there in many, many respects, and he took me under his wing, not to use a metaphor.
And then attach you.
Evan Hunter, speaking to Terry Gross in 1999. He died earlier this week. He was 78. His final novel, published under the name Ed McBain, the 55th and final book in his 87th Precinct series, is called Fiddlers. It will be published posthumously this September, followed in 2006 by a collection of short stories spanning Hunter's entire career. I'm David Bean Cooley, and this is Fresh Air.